welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest news in health research. Hope you guys are having a wonderful day today. I have Dad on here as always now, since he is back in town. How are you doing today, Dad?
You know, Austin, if it was any better, I'd have to charge admission. I'm doing absolutely wonderful, and every time I get to talk to our wonderful listeners, it just brightens up my day, and it's just it's a blessing to me. So, you guys, thanks for listening today. It's just always fun to talk to you and hang out with you, because most of the time we kind of talk like we're in the living room with you, hanging around by a fireplace. So that's just how we kind of are, and I hope you're okay with that, because I'm not going to filter stuff for you. I'm just going to tell you the truth of how I see things, and we kind of give you a different, unique take on the news, because remember, I'm 60 years old, Austin's 28 years old, and because of that, we're getting multiple generations listening that are in their 20s and in their 50s and 60s, and I kind of like it that way, because it gives us a unique take on the news, as far as I'm concerned, Austin. So yes, thank you guys for listening, and thank you for supporting Health Masters. I really appreciate you guys. I've got to cut out early today. I'll be on for about another 50 minutes. And I'm actually one of the top leaders here in Central Florida for the Trump campaign, and I've got to go to the Trump campaign headquarters here about 10 minutes till 4 our time, so I have to leave about 10 minutes early today, so or actually about 7 minutes early, so I'll be with you for almost the entire show otherwise. So there you go, Austin. What's your first story?
Well, the first one, I wanted to bring this up because I've talked about it repeatedly in the past, but I wanted to kind of address it from a little bit more of a research approach now, as far as really, really restricting the amount of time your children spend on iPhones and iPads and tablets and computers and so forth. It's really not healthy, and more research now is coming out and showing that it has a very, very sedative effect on children, and it really does not allow proper brain development. A new study came out from the World Congress of Anesthesiologists. The researchers assigned children that were to receive a sedative prior to a surgery, while other children were instead allowed to play iPad games for 20 minutes. Both groups of children were then given anesthesia. The researchers found that playing games on the iPad reduced anxiety as effectively as a sedative drug. Now, of course, there's no evidence that iPads cause the same psychological changes as sedatives, but playing with a mobile device can have effects on the brain, and a growing number of evidence now suggesting excessive use of iPads and other mobile devices can cause significant psychological, emotional, and physical problems for children's health. Researchers are drawing attention now to the risk of an increasingly common parental behavior, handing an iPad to a child to help them calm down, such as in the midst of a tantrum or not getting their way. And I've seen this, guys, now repeatedly. We were out dinner a couple weeks ago with some friends of ours, and we had Hunter with us, and they had their son that was basically came along with him. He's 9 years old, and he literally sat at the table the entire time and played on his mom's iPhone. The entire time, like an hour and a half. Never looked up from it one time except to eat his food, and at that same time he was still playing it while I was eating his food. So I even told his dad, I said, "Is he just sit there and play his phone all day?" And he goes, "Oh yeah, well he keeps him quiet." I thought, how sad is this we've become now? We can't even control or raise our kids. We have to put them in front of a screen like a idiot. Now, according to some children psychologists, they're saying that doing this with children really prevents them from learning how to regulate their feelings and also makes them dependent on external sources for pleasure when they feel upset. It has been well studied that increased television time decreases a child's development of language and social skills, says Jenny Radzik of Boston University. Mobile media uses similarly replaces the amount of time spent engaging in direct human-human interaction. If these devices become the predominant method to calm and distract young children, how will they ever be able to develop their own internal mechanisms of self-regulation? Heavy device use during childhood can interfere with development of empathy, social, and problem-solving skills that are typically obtained by exploring unstructured play and interacting with friends, she goes on to say. Studies also suggest that heavy iPad use can hamper motor development and hand-eye coordination. This is causing children to arrive at school unable to perform simple tasks such as stacking blocks that may later affect their ability to learn and write. Researchers support the effectiveness of simply setting limits on your children's screen time to very minimal times. They also recommend banning screens from the bedroom and turning off Wi-Fi at night. so more and more researchers now are coming out and saying this is not a healthy behavior to engage in. If they want to use it for a certain playtime or as a, you know, basically a perk, you know, they've done something good, they've gotten their chores done, okay, they get 10 or 15 minutes playing this specific game, and that's what they get, that's okay, using it as a positive reinforcement. But using this, guys, is basically a dumbing down tool to babysit your kids so they don't have to do anything. It's not a good idea. I've already talked to Lana about this in detail, you know, is making sure that we keep Hunter away from a lot of the just media sources all the time. Obviously, he gets exposed to something occasionally, but it's not something like setting him down in front of the TV for hours on end and just letting him be a vidiot. It's not healthy at all, and more people are saying so. So just wanted to give you guys a heads up on that with young kids and hoping you guys don't engage in that type of behavior. And if you do, try to reverse that effect and get them out of that addictive monitor lifestyle where they sit there and watch monitor screens all day on a regular basis. So that's my 2 cents on that today.
Okay, well, let me go ahead and add a few more things to your 2 cents. We'll make a nickel out of it. Okay.
Excellent.
The whole thing is this on the monitors, okay? Everything Austin said is correct. It's very addictive. It's a dopamine trigger, and they'll get to where they want to stay on it all of the time. It's just what kids do. They get in these little habits where they want to do the same things over and over and over again. If you put them on a screen like that, they can really learn a lot of computer skills, but that's about all they're going to learn. The biggest problem that I see, including the brain development, is the fact that these children are not learning social interactions, which we already talked about with Austin. But secondly, I also look at the fact that these kids in many cases are dealing with unmonitored iPads and unmonitored iPhones that don't have parental screening on them. And I'm telling you guys this, with the pornography on the internet, it's going to get them. I'm just telling you this, okay? I don't care if you put a filter on it, it's going to get them. They're going to find a way. These thinking kids are so smart nowadays with these iPhones and iPads that they'll figure a way to take the parental controls off, look at what they want to look at, and then put the parental controls back on and hand it back to you. They'll sneak over your shoulder and get your code numbers and your passcodes. This is what happens. And then pretty soon you're going to have a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old kid that's basically looking at porn all the time when you're not around because they've got the iPhone that you thought was locked up because it didn't have the right code in it for them to get onto, but they knew the code. I've seen this happen over and over and over and over and over again. Now, the globalists know this. That's why they give unrestricted access, you know, through Google, through all of the search engines they use for the pornography and all the stuff they promote, because they want to debilitate the mind, the soul, the spirit, and everything as effectively as they can train you to be a robot. We talked about this yesterday and what they're doing with transhumanism in detail. So that's a major, major problem. Now, let's step to the next problem. This is particularly with girls and with boys if they're on the telephone all the time holding it next to their skull. This iPhone, you know, it's incredibly dangerous from a radiation standpoint and microwave technology standpoint. It massively increases brain cancer. You very rarely will ever see me hold a phone next to my ear, and that's only if it's a super private conversation. I'm in public, and I can't step away. That's it. And I'm talking like once or twice a month for like 10 seconds. That's all. I will not hold that microwave generator to my head. Now, the Samsung 7, the one that Austin has, and that what you have, this that was what is called Austin, the
his Samsung S7, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That one puts out like 1/6 the amount of radiation of an iPhone. 1/6.
Now, I didn't know that.
Yes, and if I had known that when I got my new iPhone, I would have gone and stayed with the Samsung, with the Galaxy 7. But the problem is you can't use an iPad to send to people who have a Galaxy 7 if you want to text them. So I'm kind of interfaced with what we already have with the iPhones and the iPads. So it kind of puts me in a quandary as what to do. So with the girls in particular, when they have this phone, especially the iPhones, and the Samsungs are bad too, but they're not nearly as bad, and they put it in their back pocket or their front pocket, it literally radiates the area where their ovaries are. And it can cause genetic damage and genetic degradation from the eggs. Now, what happens is this. When you're born as a female, when you have the proper hormones going through your body, you have a certain supply of eggs when you were born. In other words, when you're born a baby girl, the eggs that were in you are in you. You're never going to produce any more eggs, period. With men, they constantly produce more sperm. So the sperm, even if it gets mutated by the iPhone being in your front pocket, it won't be as bad because you can just take the iPhone out of your pocket and the per sperm is going to be replaced every 24 to 72 hours or whatever your rates of sexual intercourse are. So what's going to happen is with girls, you're going to cause genetic, possibly, damage to future children if you let these young girls start throwing these iPhones and these other types of mobile devices in their pockets, or if you have them hold an iPad on their lap. Now, if you're going to be doing all of this, go online and get yourself a lead apron. That's the way to do this. If you're going to hold it on your lap and you don't want to try a different way, just get a lead apron and lay it across your lap. Now, it's going to get hot doing that, but that'll stop the radiation. Now, the further you get away from your body, even if you're 4 or 5 or 6 or 8 inches away, it will stop a lot of that, just not direct contact with the skin because it dissipates pi r squared. So it just goes away really, really fast after you get about 6, 8 inches, 10 inches away. It's like a thousandth of what it would have been had it been touching your skin. Now, what I've done is I have some chairs that came with a little computer table that actually attached to the chair that actually sets up about a foot above me. And so I can actually type on the iPad and not have this thing touching me, because I have a friend of mine that I knew who was a prophet who ended up dying of leg cancer a couple of years ago. And personally, I believe, I didn't get a chance to talk to him before he died, that he may have been using an iPad sitting on his leg for an extended period of time and doing work on it, because he did a lot of computer research. Now, if it did not cause the leg cancer, then I find it odd, because leg cancer is a very, very rare type of cancer. It's just strange to suddenly have cancer of the leg. So guys, from a behavioral standpoint, brain development standpoint, tactile coordination standpoint, reproductive standpoint, and tumor standpoint, limit the iPhone, Samsungs, no matter what, iPads, exposure to your kids, and don't let them come in contact with them on their skin at all, period. Now, what I've done with my kids is I have not allowed them to get an iPhone until they're 16, 15, 16 years old, when they start the collegiate high school program. It kind of gives them an incentive to go on the collegiate high school program, because they're going to have to learn how to regulate what they look at on the internet anyhow. So in other words, if you put parental controls on their phone when they're 16, 17 years old, yeah, it's kind of a little bit too late, to be honest with you, because if they've been looking at things they shouldn't have looked at anyhow, their behavioral patterns have already been molded at that point. I'm not saying you don't need to do that, because I think it's a good idea, but they're going to figure out a way to get them off, or they're going to pick up one of their friends' iPhones that don't have parental controls, and they're going to look at bad pictures. That's what they're going to do in most cases, because kids are really curious. So it's just one of those things that we have this whole thing now with the pornography, with the genetic damage, with the cancer, you know, with the neurological damage, and with the tactile reduction caused by these apparatus. Okay, so just limit this. God, there's nothing wrong with teaching your kids to go outside and play with other kids. The problem is all the other kids they were supposed to play with are on their iPhones. Okay, that's the problem. That's I know that sounds silly, but it's the truth. Okay, I remember when I was a kid, 8, 9, 10, 12 years old, man, I was always out in the neighborhood playing football. And we were playing full tackle football, right? And we were having a blast, you know, getting all scarred up, beat up, and kicked around. But it was fun, because you're a boy, that's what you're supposed to do. At least that's what we're told you're supposed to do. Now, I've got a funny story. Well, it's not funny, because it's true. And it's talking about feminism and how you have to be a good feminist. Now, this is an interesting article, The 7 Simple Rules for Being a Good Feminist. Now, some of this is a little bit crude, so if it's going to be offending you, I suggest that you just kind of take it with a grain of salt and just laugh a little bit about it, because this is true. Some of the stuff is just crazy. And let me share this with you real quick. Years ago, I'd gotten a speeding ticket. Oh, heaven forbid. I know now you guys are thinking, oh, you got a ticket. Well, it may have been for running a red light. I don't know. I got a ticket. Now, if you've never had a ticket, you can adjust your halo right now. I've had a bunch of them over the last 60 years, right? 45 years. And I was at the courthouse paying this ticket, trying to figure out how to do the class online and all that. And there was a police officer standing outside. And it was interesting, too, because he was really scarred up. His facial scars were bad. I mean, somebody put a knife to the boy, I found out later, and just cut him up in a fight. And what happened, he was talking to a really pretty lady. And I waited for them to pause, and I had a question to ask them. And I said to him, I said, obviously you're a pretty smart guy. You're talking to a nice-looking girl here, a nice-looking lady. And this lady went berserk and started screaming at me and told me that she was not a girl, she was not a lady. Apparently, I didn't use the proper pronoun. And what I found out later, and this is really weird, is that she was like a transsexual that had had sex change operation. Okay, I mean, I don't make this stuff up. This is just all too weird. I never make anything up. And so she just absolutely lit into me. And I thought, wow, that's really, really weird. She's obviously, you know, just a militant feminist. Now, I ran into a few of those way back in the 70s, back when I was in college at Florida State University, when this feminist revolution first took place, in which all men were chauvinist pigs in their eyes, and all women basically could do whatever they wanted to do, and it was all about male white privilege, and white men should all be killed, okay? Which a lot of these girls are lesbians, so they don't care about white men anyhow, so they don't care. Now, I'm not saying they all are, but a lot of them are. And so I learned very quickly at Florida State to be careful who you ask out, because sometimes they didn't like guys, sometimes they liked girls, and it was just a weird situation to be in. And those of you who are in the dating situations right now, you know I'm right, so I don't have to try to explain that to you. But what was interesting, one time I remember I was at FSU, and I was just trained as a child, because remember, I'm a 50s boy. I mean, I was born in the 50s. I just sound young. I take care of myself, and I take Health Masters vitamins every day. And I mean, I work out all the time, so I try to maintain as much youth as I can. And what's interesting, I remember I was always trained to open doors for ladies. And one day, I mean, I was in Tallahassee, I was at Florida State, I opened up a door for somebody going into an office building, I don't even remember where, and this lady lit into me and started screaming and cussing me because I opened the door for her. She told me she was perfectly capable of blah, 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 and some more blah, blah, blahs of opening her own door. And I thought to myself, wow, that's just really odd. I mean, I didn't really expect all that. I was the old school. I remember I told you guys that we owned a bar. And, you know, I mean, it's just what it is. I'm not trying to hide that. I mean, we owned a German beer tavern. And I remember one time we had, these people are all dead. May they rest in peace. There was a lady in there. Her name was Nell. And she was a little bit, how should you say, she was a little bit loose. I mean, there's another way of saying it than that. Okay. She got passed around a little bit. And it's just because that, and that was her own will, because she was a feminist. So she liked that. And it was really weird because she was an older lady. She's like a 45 or 50 years old when this happened. And I remember Vernon was in there, and he was a really nice guy. I used to shoot pool with him all the time. And they were like, I think Vernon, I think Nell's sister had married Vernon or something. I don't remember the exact, but they were relatives, distant relatives. And I remember she got mad at Vernon and just took and started beating him. And he laid his head. We had around the top of the bar, we had an elbow pad that was like, you know, 2 inches thick with real nice, you know, vinyl on it from back then. And he put his head down and covered up his face and basically put his forehead on the pad and covered himself up with his arms and allowed her to beat him upside the head about 20 licks. I'm not kidding you, Austin. I saw that. I've never told you that story. And she just put a pounding on him, and Vernon just sat there and just took the beating and never said anything. And then when she was done, she puffed out the front door, and we were like, wow, Vernon. And he goes, well, you know, we were raised, you know, you don't strike back at a woman. And I'm like, well, that's just really wild. She just put a beating on you. He goes, well, yeah, I'm not going to be bruised up, though, because I'd let her hit me in the eyes. And I'm like, okay, whatever, you know, whatever floats your boat. But here's the thing. What we learned as children from the 50s and the 60s and the 40s, if you're that age, you know, you treat a lady like a lady. And that's not because you disrespect them. It's because you totally respect them, because you see them as a Stradivarius violin, something of just absolute immense value, and you open doors for them. You tell them that you love them when you're married to them, or when you're dating them and you're in love. You give them 100% in the marriage, and they give you 100%. You have this incredibly wonderful marriage, and everybody gets along. Well, the feminists didn't like that, because that's not the Sabbatean way, okay? That's not the witchcraft way. They've got to debilitate the men as best they possibly can. They have to destroy them every single way they possibly can. They have to constantly put them down, because if they put the men down long enough, far enough, and fast enough, they can make a lot of these boys start liking boys, because they don't want to deal with these crazy women, because these women are nuts. And now that sounds weird to you guys, I know, but that's just the facts. And I've seen it repeatedly in today's culture, because the guys finally say, you know, heck with this stuff. This is ridiculous. These guys, these ladies are a bunch of whack bags. See, and I learned to spot these girls in college, and I still see them today. I mean, I remember when we were just at Yellowstone National Park last week, there were two lesbians basically making sure they hugged each other and kissed each other in front of me and my 15-year-old daughter. My wife was in the motorhome. Now, if my wife had been in there, she'd have chewed into them. I know she would have. You know your mom, Austin. You know she would have. To me, when I see gay people, and I'll be honest with you, I just don't even know them. I don't pay any attention to them. I don't care what they do. But it was irritating to me a little bit because it was in front of my 15-year-old daughter, but she already knows that there are girls like that out there. And I thought, this is just sick. And I remember one time, Austin, you and I were in Hawaii when you were 14 years old, and there were two of them on the beach. And I pointed them out to you because, yeah, you already saw them anyhow. So I tried to explain to you what in the world they were all about, how weird that was. And see, it's just part of what life's all about, because I just, they don't show up on my radar most of the time unless they get in my space. And I just kind of turned my back to these two at Yellowstone a few weeks ago and just ignored them, which they did not like, by the way. I think they wanted me to give them a response, and my response was, I'm ignoring you. I don't like you, and I don't approve of what you do, so you just need to do what you need to do. Leave me out of your loop. But the problem is, these women, they have their own certain mantras that they do. A lot of them are involved in Wicca and witchcraft and other things. And I'm going to read you this. This is a funny article. I said all that to read you this article. The seven simple rules for being a good feminist. You can use Hillary Clinton as a template. Okay, being a good. I'll read you the article. This is by a lady by the name of Pristang Yamo, whoever that is. Being a good feminist today is rather easy, and you don't really have to care about women. Seven simple steps. Label innocuous things as sexist sexual harassment to successfully water down all the real acts of the same. Now, what that simply means is this. If a guy asks you out, he's a sexist because he asked you out. Because he didn't use the right pronoun, he's a sexist or he's a male chauvinist pig. Okay? But you're allowed to ask everybody out because number two is you're going to basically bathe the hypocrisy. In other words, you can go up to a guy if you want and grab him by the butt or grab him by any other body part that you want, and that's supposed to be okay. Because you can objectify men because you are basically becoming stronger because you're doing that. Now, when I was dating, I had this happen to me at Florida State. You know, I was an athlete, and I had girls chasing me down and just whatever, okay? And I'm like, wow, this is crazy. But it's just what they do. Number three, you have to ignore all real injustice against women. You must defend or totally ignore things like honor killings and acid attacks on Muslim women who disgrace the religion of peace with their immodesty and their grave sins. You have more important things to focus on, like demanding representation. Okay? So what they're saying is, don't pretend like you care about what's happening to the Muslims and to the women that are required to wear their burqas or having acid thrown on their face. Don't worry about all that. That's all. You have to ignore that because you have to accept the Muslim religion because you hate white Christian men. That's why you have to do that. Number four, demand respect and do everything in your power to strip yourself of it. After demanding respect, you may want to take a look at yourself as absurd and basically useless as possible. Just act like a social justice warrior. We've seen feminists, this is what she says, cover themselves in their own menstrual blood. That's always a surefire way to dismantle any credibility. Or you can get naked while you protest the inequality of nipples and always be screaming in an unmatched decibel. Now, the reason I'm saying this one to you, the other day I was listening to a video feed from Alex Jones when they were down in Louisiana trying to talk to people from Black Lives Matter why they weren't going in and helping the flood victims who were black because the black lives didn't matter to them. And all they did for the first 30 or 40 seconds that I could stand and listen to the video is they would ask them a question and they were screaming in unison louder and louder and louder to drown out all sensible discussion. That's what they do. Always be screaming at an unmatched decibel level so nobody can ask you any questions. So finally you just say, like my attorney told me years ago, you should try to deal with one of these people in court. When they're an attorney and you're litigating against them, they don't ever stop. It's screaming and yelling and carrying on. He goes, it's awful dealing with them. Number five, practice the sacrament of abortion and then brag about it. Now, guys, ladies, you know I'm right about this. This one is crucial to these folks. If you don't participate in the sacrament into the actual killing of your unborn baby, which will likely leave you with emotionally and physical damage or at times a psychological wreck or even dead, how could you possibly call yourself a good feminist? You have the right to brag about it. You have the right to talk about partial birth abortions as if there's something to be happy about. Now, again, I was watching a video on TV on YouTube the other day, and they were talking about this at a rally about how wonderful abortion was, and they were literally getting off on it like it was a sexual thing for them, killing their children. These people are sick, sick, sick. This is how they see life. So the best thing to do with these people is just ignore them like I did the folks at Yellowstone the other day. Number six, once you've successfully painted yourself as a victim, remember John Rappaport talked about that, Austin, you have to become a victim. Then you have to project your insecurities onto innocent men. We call this one the Lena Dunham Rule. Now, I have no idea who Lena Dunham is. After creating a sense of false victimhood with which you use to excuse your disgraceful past behavior, including grabbing men by their genitalia, then project all of your subsequent insecurities on innocent men, be sure to dabble in racial and sexist stereotypes. I mean, this is crazy. I mean, this is basically what Daily Wire's editor-in-chief Ben Shapiro explains, the perfectly executed man-hating racist rant by feminists. I mean, they hate guys. And number seven, tear down all godly, holy women who disagree to follow your ridiculous rules. See, that's what they've got to do. They've got to try to do everything they possibly can to force everybody into their stereotypical behavior. Now, these folks who do this type of behavior nauseate me. Now, I can't be any more clear with you than that, unless I use a couple of bad words or ridiculous words that nobody's going to understand, and including myself, I have to look them up in a thesaurus. But that's the whole point that I'm looking at here, is that these women just need to be avoided. Okay? The Bible talks about these women in the book of Romans and men in the book of Romans who have given over the attraction for the opposite sex over to their lusts and how they will meet their end together. These women have been so dropped on their head and so screwed up by their weirdo parents and by their cultural manipulation because of the media and what the media has told them is right or wrong, like Miley Cyrus riding on a giant penis in her seminars or concerts, who was once Hannah Montana, who had the blonde wigs in the stores for all the girls to copy, and now all the girls want to be Miley Cyrus with her Wrecking Ball songs and how she can be some kind of sadistic, miserable biatch who basically hates everybody and who's pansexual and wants to screw everything on the planet, including animals. That's what they want you to become. They want you to destroy everything God made holy so they can destroy the planet and force you to the level of an animal. And that's what they want. That's what these people want. That's why I loathe these wicked feminist whackbags who act like this. I avoid them and I ignore them. I remember years ago, Austin, you had one when we were up in Missoula, and I talked about this on a show a few weeks ago, at a campground. They refused to move their vehicle, which was blocking the exit from our RV. And when we went in there, I asked them if they could please move. We sat there for like 15 minutes. They refused to pull forward 20 feet so we could exit the campground, which was sold out. Finally, you went in there and you explained to her in no uncertain terms that she needed to move her RV. And then she basically decided to talk to you in a way she shouldn't have talked to you. And you guys had this big discussion about what real world was about. And then she came out immediately and moved the RV. Now, guys, listen to me. That's the only thing these nuts understand, is you've got to be louder and meaner or more direct than them. Or you've got to turn the other cheek and walk away and just ignore them and avoid them. But when you have a direct confrontation with these nutties, you got to either walk or you got to talk. You got to do one of the two. Yeah. Nothing else is going to work. I'm telling you guys that. Now, you say, is that the Christian way? The walking's probably okay. Sometimes the talking to what you got to say to them ain't right. But the problem is, I'm not a wimp boy, okay? I don't fly a doggone rainbow flag off the back of an H1. We don't do that, okay? We don't live like that. We don't talk like that, and we're not going to be that. I'm not some wimpy little male that has to be beaten down by some female. I mean, it's ridiculous that guys put up with this junk, but they do. And ladies, I commend you. I admire you. And if you're a true godly woman and you practice holiness, I look at you as a Stradivarius violin, beautiful in God's eyes, something to be held and just admired and treated with the utmost respect, and in a marriage to be given 100% of everything that you can be done for you. And that's how I look at it, Austin. And that's how marriages work. Everybody gives 100%. Okay, I'm done pontificating, Austin. That's half the show on that silly nonsense. But I wanted to just get that off my chest. I read that article this morning. I thought, yeah, I couldn't say that any better than that, so I'm going to go ahead and just kind of talk about it some. So what's your next story, buddy?
Well, this came in today. This is very ironic. A lot of people are thinking this was not by accident. Putin's official BMW presidential car was in an accident today. He was not in the vehicle, actually. He had already been dropped off. The driver was killed. The driver was alone without a passenger, a Mercedes crossed the median and was moving on the divided strips towards the BMW had a full head-on collision occurring on the site near Kutsvatsva. A powerful blow killed the driver, who was basically Putin's main driver. He died on the spot. His body was rescued from the wrecked cab. The second victim, who was in the Mercedes, was sent to the hospital with serious injuries. This is a full-blown head-on collision. You can see the video. What's very odd about this is the Mercedes just quickly veers off and has a head-on collision. There's no blown tire. There's no blown engine. There's no smoke. It's very, very odd. Putin was not in the vehicle, though, which was very, very good. The first thing I saw when I thought about this was Princess Di and that whole accident that happened. Now, like I said, this could have been completely just non-connected to anything, just a random occurrence, but I find this very odd now. As strong as Putin has been going against the globalists, the GMOs, Monsanto, the Satanists, everything he's blatantly said he's not about, all of a sudden, his presidential vehicle happens to have a head-on collision, and he's not in it at that time, which he's almost always in. This is his main driver that he usually preferred to ride with. So I thought that was interesting. I just kind of want to bring that to everybody's attention today. Not that I'm speculating on it, just bringing you facts, but I'm telling you it is rather odd that that happened right now.
Well, Austin, I read another article this morning again. I can't document this, but I'm going to tell you what it said, that basically Obama has used the CIA to put a hit on Putin to get him out of the election cycle. That's what I read this morning. Now, whether that's true or not, I have no idea. And, you know, I don't like doing that, but that's why I quantify every time I do something like that. I'll say, look, I have no idea if this is true. But that makes sense to me because, remember, Obama does not run the United States. The Sabbatean handlers, the big banks, the sexual, weirdo, perverted, Luciferian, screw every kid they can find, weirdo nightmares that should be taken out back and shot in the back of the head run the planet. Okay? That's who runs the planet. And if they decide they're going to put a hit on Putin because of what he's doing, they're the ones who call for that, not Obama. Because Obama is a figurehead. That's all he is. He may have a little bit of authority, a little bit of power with the military if he exercises it because he is the commander-in-chief. It's like Harry Truman and Eisenhower did when they're commander-in-chief. Like Eisenhower said, if you don't tell me what's Area 51, we're going to march the army into Area 51 and you're going to tell me what's there. And they did. So, guys, listen to me. Obama is a figurehead. If the CIA has put a hit on Putin, Putin better watch his back. He better stay off the helicopters, off the planes, off everything until after our election cycle is over with, because they hate him because he stands against almost every single thing that globalism is for. Remember, I read you the article a few months ago. Putin said, look, the West worships Satan. If they want to do that, that's up to them. As for me and Russia, leave us out of it. Leave us out of it. And see, that's the whole key. I don't want to be in it. I don't want to be in their weirdo, wacko parties they have. I mean, there's sick stuff that I talked about on the show one time. One of the top DJs in America went to one of their Babylonian sex parties, and he walked out of it because of the perversion. That's how these sickos live. That's what they do. That's what their life is all about. It's all about bringing in Lucifer's kingdom onto this planet. And that's what the whole thing with the transhumanism movement's about. We talked about yesterday. It's the whole thing about the feminism is to destroy the culture of the United States and destroy the West. They're bringing in all of these illegal aliens to stop, to do multiple voting and voter fraud at the election machines. That's what this whole thing's about. Because I think they're afraid of exit polling. That's the only reason they would do this. That's why they would bring the precinct after precinct after precinct to vote for Hillary. Because they know if they try to hack all the elections with the doggone Diebold election machines fraud, that they're going to have all these exit polls say that election numbers don't add up. I mean, guys, this is where we are now. We're in a situation where our country's been jacked by these globalist, banking, Luciferian guys who run Goldman Sachs, who run the Federal Reserve Bank, who took us over with the Exchange Stability Fund in 1934 when they brought their shadow government after they seized all the gold. This is who we have in office right now. These are the ones that are running the planet and doing what they want to do to us. The last true president that we had in the United States was a Democrat. His name was John F. Kennedy, and may he rest in peace, because he said he was getting rid of the CIA. He was going to disclose the stuff that happened at Roswell. He was going to tell us what was going on, and they killed him. He also wanted to get rid of the Federal Reserve Bank with Executive Order 11110. John F. Kennedy was a man after the heart of America. He was also a man after the heart of Germany. His Ich bin ein Berliner speech, when the wall was going up, roused an entire continent to support him back in the 60s. And guys, listen to me. We've not yet had a man like that. We're still fighting the tyranny from that Sabbatean witchcraft wife nightmare, Abraham Lincoln. What a whack bag these guys were. Okay, well, that's why we're fighting him the rest of our lives in this country. But I'm all caught up on this stuff today. Awesome. Here, I'm going to tell you. So here's another thing. Singular Montel Ucast is an asthma medication that's given to young children, and has been linked to serious psychotic episodes in these same kids. Parents are now calling for new warning labels on a common asthma tablet that has been linked to cases of suicidal thoughts and depression in children as young as 4 who now want to kill themselves at the age of 4. The drug called Montel Ucast, or Singular, is prescribed for children aged 2 to 14 with frequent, intermittent, mild, persistent, or exercise-induced asthma. Now, guys, this is ridiculous. Melanie, who does not want her surname used, said her 6-year-old son, Harrison, suffered from what his doctors called a psychotic breakdown after being on Singular. 6 years old. Melanie said her usually friendly, affectionate child began flying into uncontrollable rages, upending furniture, and gnashing his teeth with his face contorted with rage. He would say, "I want to go to heaven, and I don't want to be here anymore," he would say. "I was incredibly shocked when I realized that a little chewable tablet to control his asthma symptoms, which could possibly be linked to such severe psychological symptoms. The drug is used by thousands of Australian children with asthma. The figures obtained by the ABC show between January 20th and 2016, the Therapeutic Goods Administration received almost 90 reports of psychiatric events in children and adolescents treated with medication. And usually the ones reported, it's 1%. So you're looking at thousands of them. So guys, listen to me. Don't do this with your kids with this drug. There's a lot of natural things, especially if you're breastfeeding with children, to help them get rid of asthma. If they're older, get them to take certain supplements. B5, B6, B-complex, all critical supplements. Flaxseed oil, bioplasma cell salts. There's all kinds of ways to help a child with asthma. I think we have an asthma support protocol on the website. If not, well, I'll put it on there for you guys. It's very easy to correct in most conditions, not all, but in most, by supplementation and proper dietary change. Austin, what do you think?
Well, yeah, the Corticare B5, B6 is one of the best products to help out with that. I know the turmeric force is also good. There's another one I can't remember. What's the other product that really helps out with that in conjunction?
It's the B5, B6, and also the flaxseed oil, also the bioplasma cell salts. Because remember, the lungs are the storehouse of the body's mineral reserves. And you need to be on a good bioplasma cell salt and also a silica supplement just to keep your hair, nails, and skin in good shape. Plus, it also keeps the lungs strong. So it's very, very important that you do that on a daily basis if you possibly can. Just a teaspoon or two of the silica salts and the bioplasma cell salts every day. They're very inexpensive, and they work and do a great, great job. So I really like those. I take them. In fact, when I was having problems, 5 or 6 years ago with some flaky stuff on my head. It was like seborrhea psoriasis on my skull. I'm like, "You gotta be kidding me." And I went to the doctor and I'm thinking to myself, "This is ridiculous. How in the world can I possibly have this problem?" And I started doing research, and then I went to the doctor, and the doctor told me, "Don't worry about this. This will stop doing this about 5 or 6 days before you die." And I looked at him, and this is a dermatologist who's highly respected in the area. And I looked at him, and I'm not going to use his name out of respect for him because I really like the guy. And I said, "I can't fix this." He goes, "No, there's no cure for this." He goes, "You're going to have this problem with this stuff and this pitting on your skull and your scalp, you know, the rest of your life until right before you die, and then your adrenals are shot and your body doesn't do that anymore, and then it clears up and you die." And I said, "Well, I'm not going to accept that. I'm going to die and then it's going to go away. I mean, this is stupid. I don't want this right now. I'm 55 years old." And so I remember I started doing all the research, and I went back to one of Jensen's books on the biochemistry of man, which is a great book. You guys need to read it. It's old. It's back in the 40s and 50s. I think he wrote it maybe in the 60s. And I started doing research on skin, and it said right in there, silica is one of the primary minerals you got to have. And I knew that, but guys, I know a lot of stuff, and so I have to go back to my reference book sometimes just to get refreshed on it. And I remember I thought, wow, okay. And then I started doing research on borage oil, which you also have. So I started using the borage oil, the silicone, the bioplasma cell salts, and that stuff cleared up on my head, and that all that silly dandruff and all that stuff completely disappeared within 3 weeks. And it's never been back. Unless I don't take these on a regular basis, then it occasionally comes back, and I just take them again, and it goes away. So I try to take it on a regular basis every single day. So that's just my little tidbit hint for the day of, you know, what Ted's had to do. Okay. What's your next story, Austin?
Well, this is a health one, too, on the compound TBHQ. I've never really talked about this one before. This is a very, very common preservative. It's a flavor ingredient that's in almost every processed packaged food you can think of, generally. Anywhere from Cheez-Its to Pop-Tarts to popcorn to party pizza, flatbread, Snickers, Reese's, pizza rolls, toaster strudels, you name it, this ingredient's in there. Look it up on just about any packaged food, TBHQ. Well, now, Cheryl Rockwell, an assistant professor of pharmacology and toxicology at Michigan State University, has done 9 years of research now and has found the common food additive TBHQ, which we already knew it had issues. Now she has found it causes abnormal reactions in the immune system that trigger food allergies. She explains that TBHQ negatively affects T cells in the body in a way that promotes allergies to tree nuts, milk, eggs, wheat, and shellfish. She said because humans are exposed to TBHQ through ingestion of food, the development of food allergies may be a very serious concern. Notably, there have been an increase in the reports of food allergies that correlates with the increased use of TBHQs and phenolic antioxidants as food preservatives. It's basically, it's been linked to numerous things as visual disturbances, liver enlargement, behavioral issues in children, stomach issues, including cancer in animal studies. This is something that FDA still allows in their food, but a lot of companies have chosen to take it out now because of how toxic it is. But again, it's still in a lot of food. McDonald's had it removed. They used to carry it for the longest time. Chick-fil-A actually had it in their peanut oil all the way up till 2012. Where it was finally completely ditched in 2015. But this is something you guys really need to keep an eye out for and stay away from it because, like I said, it's in almost everything from Pillsbury croissants to cookies to toaster strudels. It's in there, and all you got to look for it, and it has to be clearly listed, and it'll say in there TBHQ. Usually it's right around the preservative area or sodium benzoate. TBHQ usually follows. So do yourself a favor, guys, and cut this stuff out of your system, especially if you're having food allergies. You shouldn't be eating processed food anyways like this. But if you are, take a look at it and make sure you're cutting the stuff out of your diet because this lady now spent 9 years researching it and has directly linked it to the immune system triggering food allergies. So I wanted to give you guys that information now because I've never brought up that compound before, even though it's really toxic and you should never eat it.
Correct. All these different flavor enhancers and compounds that we're getting in our food supply. I saw an article the other day said that one of the secret ingredients in Kentucky Fried Chicken now is MSG, which that doesn't surprise anybody who's listening to this show. I mean, and don't get me wrong. Okay, look, I used to eat Kentucky Fried Chicken, the extra crispy, the original. I loved it. It tastes great. I'm not even trying to put some halo over my head that I don't like this stuff. It tastes absolutely wonderful. But the last time I've had it, it's like 35 years ago. And I'm not going to eat that stuff. I refuse to put it in my bodies. But, you know, it's what they do. The MSG is super addictive. It's a glutamic acid. It's monosodium glutamate. It's a dopamine trigger. And it makes food taste amazing. But don't use any food with MSG because of what it does to the brain. It can actually eat holes in your brain, for heaven's sakes. It's the same thing that triggers you with the aspartame, with the glutamic acid, you know, with the aspartic acid. It's the same thing. It's another excitotoxin, different compound, but it's the same product, same thing, does the same thing as a dopamine trigger. So guys, stay away from all of these flavors, enhancers, and all this other junk, and stay away from sodium nitrite. I can't tell you how important it is. If you're going to eat luncheon meat, don't ever put anything in your body with sodium nitrite. Try to stay with organic luncheon meats from non-GMO fed livestock or turkey or poultry or whatever. That's the best. If you have to compromise on a sandwich, you can get boar's head. But make sure you understand you got to read the label on boar's head because there's some things in boar's head that aren't good either. I'm not telling you that I would like to recommend that to you, but it's an alternative as to eating really, really bad stuff. But make sure you only get the boar's head without sodium nitrite, even though it has some other things in there I don't like. It's better than going out and eating sodium nitrite sandwich. And that's one of the first things I ask Austin if I order a Reuben sandwich. in a restaurant, does your, you know, does the corned beef have sodium nitrite in it? Because almost always it does. And if it doesn't, then I may order a Reuben sandwich. But it's very rare that you can actually find a sandwich, you know, roast, you know, a Reuben sandwich with corned beef on it that doesn't contain sodium nitrite. Guys, that's one of those, that's one of those acid tests that I do. There's certain things that I look at. If it says canola oil on the label, I'm done with it. If it says soybean oil with it, I'm done with it. If it says MSG on it, I'm done with it. If it says pork on it, I'm done with it. If it says trans fat or hydrogenated oils, I'm done with it. And I most certainly, if it says sodium nitrite, I'm done with it, because 60 times the risk of pancreatic cancer with sodium nitrite. So, guys, it's one of those things you don't need to put in your body ever in any concentrations whatsoever, including these other things I just mentioned. And so look on the label. Write those down real quick and just, you know, put them on your iPhone. Just put, use them on your text, you know, and just say, okay, I'm at the grocery store. He said, don't use these, and these. Okay, great. Dr. Brower's right. I've done the research. Here's what they are. Guys, it's just that simple. There's only a few things that I never, ever put into my body. That's pretty much the short list of those. And if you just look at the processed foods, almost every processed food contains one of those things I just listed. So you got to really start eating clean. And that's, in fact, we got a brand new book coming out. It's going to be great on changing your diet. We've been working on it, working on it, working on it. It's almost finished now. And so hopefully within the next couple of months, we'll be able to get that printed up and ready to go and released to you guys. And just as a blessing to you guys, I want to just do the best I possibly can to get all of this information out in written form, because guys are always asking me and calling me up and saying, when do we have more material, new material coming out? You know, it's just me and Austin, okay? We're doing the best we can. It's a lot of work, you know, doing this show every single day. And that's why I want to really come back, and I want to tell you guys, thank you again. Thank you for supporting Health Masters. Thank you for being here for us. Thank you for the incredible emails that you send us. Thank you for getting your multiple vitamins from us and your other supplements from us when you guys can afford it. You know, $25 a month, it's not going to change your lifestyle, but it helps support this show. The silly Comrex, you know, that I want to get, I just found that that thing's $5,000. I got to raise the money for that and try to get that paid for. So, guys, there's all kinds of stuff that we just appreciate that you do for us. And thank you so much for telling folks about the show. I mean, it means so much to me. Now, of course, a lot of folks may say, wow, Ted got too graphic today on the show, or Ted went on too big of a rant. Sorry, guys, that's our style. That's what we do. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and it's just not my personality. I'm just not that kind of guy. I'm the guy that runs around with an American flag behind the H1. I mean, that's how we are, and that's how we believe. And you guys know that. You've been listening to me for a long, long time. Many of you have been following our CDs and our tape series and our seminars that we've done for decades. And thank you for supporting us. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I love you guys. I appreciate you guys. And right now I got to take off, Austin, because I got to go to that Trump meeting. So I love you guys. I appreciate you. Austin, go ahead and finish the show, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. God bless.
Sounds good, bud. All right. Here in other news here, this is quite sad, and I hate having to keep bringing this up, but, you know, gun-controlled Chicago, Illinois now has surpassed 500 homicides year-to-date already right now. They have 69 people shot over Labor Day weekend. 13 were killed. 52 were wounded. That brings the total homicide to 512 with already 4 months left to go this year. There were a total of 468 homicides in Chicago throughout the entire last year. This is just becoming worse and worse and worse of an epidemic. And, you know, obviously the gun control that they started implementing 25 years ago has not worked well for that city at all. The gang violence has gotten completely out of control, and I pray for anybody there that is not involved in that, that they can hopefully find a way out of that place and get to a safer, more calmer area of town or to a different city, because that's not something anybody needs to deal with. But I just wanted to bring that up to kind of show you guys how bad it's getting over there, and we're still in a very, very calm economic situation here in the United States. Nothing even severe has happened yet, like a massive collapse or anything of that sort. So it kind of gives you an eye opener to see what type of people, what type of behavior people engage in when things aren't even that severe. Just kind of an eye opener. Albuquerque, New Mexico now is still completely out of control. If you guys remember, in the spring, New Mexico governor signed a bill into law that prevented law enforcement from seizing people's assets without securing a criminal conviction. This happened after the Las Cruces asset forfeiture seminar in which the speaker basically said asset forfeiture is used by law enforcement to shop for things they want. That's what he said. Now, what's happened now, a couple months later, the city of Albuquerque has now been sued by state legislators because the police are refusing to stop seizing assets, mainly vehicles, without obtaining conviction. They're claiming now, the city of Albuquerque is complaining the law only applies to state police. So apparently what they're finding now is a loophole that applied to state troopers and county and does not actually apply to the city of Albuquerque PD. Complete low-life move in what they're doing. They're saying the ordinance is a narrowly tailored nuisance abatement law that they're using as a loophole to protect public from dangerous DUI repeat offenders. The ordinance provides defense to forfeiture to protect innocent owners and has been upheld in courts. It's completely and totally a lie. Here's what's really happening when the Albuquerque police blow off state law and perform nuisance abatement is what they're calling it. This one lady, after her son was arrested in April for drunk driving while he was at the wheel of her Nissan, Arlene Harjo, 56 years old, never been arrested, didn't even have any type of significant traffic citation in her life, found herself in court being told she either had to transfer ownership of her car to the city or settle the case for over $4,000 to get her car back. So basically what they told her is, you sign over your car to us for free because your son was driving it intoxicated. You weren't in the vehicle. You didn't even give him permission to drive the vehicle. He took your vehicle out without your permission, got drunk, got arrested. They seized the vehicle now and refused to release it for less than $4,000. The sad part is, and this is the most disturbing part of all this now, is she still has a lien on the car from the lending company. The car's financed. She's still making payments on the car. She's still making payments on it. Yet Albuquerque PD thinks they have the right, the constitutional right, to go in and seize her car and hold it, even though she was never charged with a crime. She was never involved in a crime. Her son was charged with a misdemeanor DWI, and they're refusing to give it back to her. So she's stuck in this position now where she can't even get her car back without coughing up $4,000. And here's the even more sadistic part that Albuquerque PD is doing to her. If she pulls out the $4,000, she somehow comes out with the $4,000, pays them their money, they're still requiring that the vehicle is booted for 18 months if she is not presently in the vehicle. So the vehicle, she has to pay to have a boot every month on her vehicle for 18 months. Until after that 18 months, the boot does not have to be applied to that vehicle when she is not driving it. So she has to pay for that on top of it after she pays them the $4,000. It's crazy to me what is going on now with this asset forfeiture. It's being used to directly feed the law enforcement. As Carmela points out, her attorney, the city of Albuquerque currently seizes around 1,000 cars a year. Guys, look at the number for a second. That's 3 vehicles a day on average. 3 vehicles a day, every day of the year. The city of Albuquerque law enforcement directly has benefited almost $9 million in vehicles since the beginning of 2010. The city is not interested in scaling back its seizures because it's already decided how many cars it needs to take in possession to hit its budget numbers for the year. Without a ruling declaring these seizures completely illegal under state law, Albuquerque police will be viewing every minor traffic stop, as they already have, as an opportunity to take another criminal vehicle off the street. This is crazy to me that these guys are still getting away with it. And I had a discussion with my buddy last week, and I said, you think we're free? He said, we're not free. I said, we live in a cage. I said, you can't do anything now without getting a fine. I told you about Lana getting 3 window tint tickets on the way to church the other weekend. 3 window tint tickets. Didn't break a law, had her seatbelt on, didn't run a red light, didn't speed, didn't change lanes, let up blinker. Not a single issue came up. Not a single infraction was broken. But the officer decided he thought her windows were too dark, and he pulled her over and wrote her 3 tickets. My buddy who I was just talking to, he got a a red light ticket in Orlando for almost $200 because a camera decided that he ran the red light when he was in the middle of the intersection when it turned red, and he had to go pay it. They told him they were threatening to take his driver's license. They're basically going to follow the state of Florida. It was going to go to court. The fines were going to increase, and they were eventually going to basically put a hold and suspend his driver's license over a red light camera. Guys, this is not the way of a free society. This is not the constitutional United States that was ever designed to be what we have now. This complete and total tyrannical government that is 100% out of control, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. Albuquerque is just an abysmal failure of what the constitutional republic was supposed to be. It is a failure that they're doing this to people, and they're actually getting away with it. Seizing on average 1,000 vehicles per year, 3 vehicles every day in Albuquerque getting seized for stupid infractions, stupid stuff. Your son takes your vehicle without permission and gets a DWI, and you get your vehicle seized. That's why it's so important, guys, that we start standing together and making a stand for this and doing the best we can. That's why now, if I ever get a ticket, I immediately have my attorney handle it. I don't settle it. I don't just go and pay the fine. I don't do any nonsense like that. I don't take the points. I do every single thing I can to try and fight them from every area I can. Anytime something happens, I don't even care if it costs me more money. As long as I can prevent the courts from getting more assets from me and being able to penalize me, I do everything I can. Now, some people say, well, that's kind of juvenile. You shouldn't do that anyways. Well, I try not to. I try to obey the law as much as possible. But quite frankly, when's the last time somebody let you vote on the speed limit on your interstate? Simple question. When's the last time you got to vote that the speed limit needed to stay 70 or needed to go down or needed to go up? When's the last time you got to vote on the red light camera that got put up in your area that you were basically going to have to slam on your brakes every time a light turned yellow and almost caused an accident for fear of getting another $200 fine? When's the last time you got asked to vote on that? I don't know. Not me. Not one single person I've ever talked to in the last few years, ever. Nobody's ever talked to me and said, oh, yeah, I voted on more red light cameras. I voted on dropping the speed limit. I voted on making sure we have window tint tickets. I voted on making sure you get ticketed if you don't wear your seatbelt. That's the crazy thing, guys, is it goes further and further and further. I still remember, and I bring it up so many times, when they tell everybody in Florida, we're going to start ticketing for seatbelts. The seatbelts will not be a traffic stop. You cannot be pulled for seatbelts. If you get pulled and you do not have your seatbelt, it will be a traffic citation. That's it. The next year, bam, that's a pullable offense. We can pull you if we see you not wearing your seatbelt, and the fine's almost doubled now. That's where it's going, guys. The government knows no bounds unless we step in and say, guys, I appreciate it. I hope the show was great for you today. We'll have tons of more articles for you tomorrow. Same time as always. You need anything, give us a call. Email us, healthmasters.com. You guys have a blessed night. We'll be on again with you tomorrow, as always.